Welcome back to the Building Life Young Athletes podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Reneke. Thanks so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. If you're new here, the goal of this podcast is to help keep you active and healthy for life through actionable evidence-informed education. And for those who don't know me, I'm Jordan, and I'm a board-certified family and sports medicine physician, and my goal is to help keep you healthy. My goal is to just give you education, information, and how to improve your life and just be healthy and be the best you can be. And today we're going to talk all about lower back pain, one of the most common things, so let's dive into it. All right, so today we're talking all about low back pain, and this is an enormous topic. We are going to do the 20,000 foot view here because this could be an entire course in and of itself. There is so much going on. It is vast, but we're going to kind of give the general overview of low back pain, specifically acute low back pain, like when we have an acute injury, and how we should be managing this in the primary care clinic, or if you know yourself watching this, have this yourself, we can kind of talk and walk through it. So let's dive into it. First, we're going to talk about where this is coming from. This is coming from the Australian Low Back Pain Clinical Care Standards, and it is an awesome, awesome document. I'll link it up here, but it is a 66-page document covering the evaluation, workup, imaging, treatment, all this stuff for low back pain, and the goal is to help deliver evidence-based clinical care and promote shared decision-making between patients, carers, and clinicians. And let me tell you, it is an awesome read. It's long. It's like I said, 66 pages, but it's really jam-packed with lots of stuff. So what we're going to go through today is essentially the take-home points of this. They kind of have these, you know, 8-10 points, whatever it is, and they give you like the highlights of how we should be treating low back pain. And we're going to go through those today just so you have an up-to-date idea of how we should be looking and thinking about low back pain and how we should be treating it. And so if it walks into your clinic, you feel confident that, hey, I'm doing the right thing, and that, you know, we don't have to necessarily go down the rabbit hole of, you know, what we think we should be doing. And so this is kind of evidence informed, and we'll keep you up to date on, you know, what the evidence shows. So specifically, they mentioned the initial clinical assessment, right? So what we should be focusing on here is we're screening for specific and or serious pathology and then focusing on psychosocial factors. And this includes a targeted history and physical exam with a focused neuro exam when appropriate. And so this kind of goes hand in hand with what I say all the time is like, we got to rule out the big, bad, scary stuff, right? That's the biggest thing with back pain is like, we need to make sure there's not any big, bad, scary stuff. So obviously things like if we're having spinal cord impingement or issues with bowel or bladder, you know, if you're not having issues with controlling bowel or bladder, you're having bilateral numbness, tingling, weakness, you're having like profound muscle weakness, all those things are not normal. And obviously that's what we're screening out for, right? That's like what our focus should be on is like, hey, making sure that we're not missing things. You know, I have previous videos on eval of the spine, kind of walks you through how to do that. But that's the big thing. We don't want to miss big, bad, or scary. That's what we really should be focusing on. So we do a targeted physical exam, and we can do the neuro exam when appropriate, right? So if we're worried about something more specifically, then we can have a more focused neuro exam, but specifically just kind of overall seeing that. And then they also mentioned we should be focusing on psychosocial factors right away in our initial clinical assessment. So that's a change for most people in terms of most people just think like, hey, this is mechanical low back pain. Like your back hurts because of X, Y, and Z. That's it. But like understanding that a lot of psychosocial components play into low back pain. And so that's, I think, really cool here. They talk about right away, we should be considering that. And obviously that's like a vague, nebulous term. It's hard to be like, oh, this is what you should do. But just understanding that, hey, there's a lot going on. When we're talking about psychosocial factors, we say, hey, how's your sleep? How is your stress at work? Like all those things, like how that fits in their life and their stress and all that, and their overall just general strain. So just understand the initial clinical assessment is, you know, looking out, ruling out big, bad, scary stuff, and then a targeted history and physical as need be, but also considering our psychosocial factors. And then moving on to that psychosocial assessment, like I just mentioned, going a little deeper there, we should assess for these factors that may impact their recovery. That's why we care about it so much. We're assessing their understanding of their plan, their concerns about their pain, their diagnosis, impact on pain in their life, all those things. And so that's a lot, right? So when you're talking with someone with pain and back pain, it's a lot. If someone's never experienced it before, it can be very scary, right? It can be debilitating. People are just like, oh my gosh, like something bad must be really happening because this is like the worst pain I've ever had. And there's lots, and you feel helpless as a doctor. You're like, oh man, this stinks. Like you're in it. And like, there's not a whole lot we can do, but like educating and you know, just kind of telling them what to expect can be very helpful. And you have to understand like their perception of pain, right? Their concerns with their pain. You know, is there concern with their pain that I have something wrong structurally? Is it that I'm going to miss work and I can't pay rent? Is, you know, are they saying this is a diagnosis that will be with me forever? Is this, you know, going to exacerbate my other pain or something? Like, there's lots of stuff going on. So when we have all those psychosocial factors, you know, looking at their concern specifically for their own pain, that's the biggest thing right there. If I had to just kind of pound on, like, their concern for the pain, like, why are they concerned? Is it structural? Is it other things? So that's a whole part of the thing. Is pain is awful. Obviously, it's no fun. Like, it's not fun being in pain, but there's other things that could be beneath that or making it worse that we should at least ask about in our initial evaluation. And once we do that, they talk about imaging, right? So you've kind of done your physical exam. I have exam videos on how to do the physical exam for the back and all that stuff. But once you've done your exam and your history, and then we have to figure out, hey, do we need to get imaging? And they recommend reserving imaging for suspected serious pathology. And they say that because a lot of the times what you're going to do is you're going to get x-rays and they're totally normal. Or they might have some benign changes and you kind of have to talk about it. But a lot of times, unless there's concern or red flags, we don't need to get imaging initially at the first presentation, right? So this is kind of assuming someone's coming to you in your clinic and saying, hey, like, what's going on? And my back hurts. And you're doing that initial eval. This is what we're thinking about here. And you talk about discussing expectations of imaging and its limited role in diagnosing low back pain, right? So the limited role meaning, like, okay, we'll get this x-ray, but like, it's not going to show anything. And it's not going to necessarily tell us anything and it won't necessarily change anything. And so understand that, hey, we, you know, if someone really wants imaging for reassurance, like, that's not an unreasonable thing. If a patient is like, hey, I'm willing to go under the exposure of radiation, I'm willing to maybe pay the cost. Like, that's not unreasonable. Obviously our healthcare system is strained on resources. That's a whole other discussion. But For most people, x-ray doesn't change our plan. You know, even MRIs probably don't change the plan, but we're not ordering MRIs initially unless there's big, bad, scary stuff. But, you know, just discussing with them, hey, like, it's got some limitations and there's stuff we might see. And they also talk about, you know, obtaining imaging in an early or appropriate manner, meaning when serious pathology is suspected, yeah, absolutely, we need to be getting our imaging because there's no messing around, right? If we talked about those red flag things before, if there's red flags, don't pass go, gotta get imaging, at least start with x-rays, kind of working up to MRI. But vast majority of people do not need that. And then we also have to discuss the likelihood and significance of incidental findings as well. And if you've ever ordered a lumbar MRI or cervical MRI or whatever, like, you know, this is going to happen, right? So you order it and you're like, okay, multi-level mild degenerative changes. What do I do with that? Right. And so that's what we have to say. Hey, we're likely going to find these age-related changes. And, you know, I don't like using the term degenerative changes necessarily, more like age-related saying, because degenerative sounds scary, right? Like, oh, like, it's scary and it's degenerating and I need to be cautious and I'm fragile. And I like saying age-related. Like, if you did my back, I probably have these things, you know, anybody over 30s probably had them. And so just kind of saying, hey, like, we're probably going to find some things and those don't necessarily correlate to your pain. Just setting an expectation. I mean, obviously, yes, the biopsychosocial model includes bio. So when you have a giant disc bulge, like, that can be causing pain. Like, absolutely. I'm not saying that is not the case at all. And so I think sometimes, you know, when we consider biopsychosocial, we tend to like discard like bio, like, oh, it can't be bio. Like, nope, that's a thing. You know, we've got spinal stenosis, we've got really bad disc bulge, anything like that can definitely happen. But you're most likely going to find just kind of these mild changes, like mild degenerative changes. Like, what do I do with that? And you have to be prepared for that and prepare your patient that things will find, especially nowadays if they have access in their EMR and they read it first and they're like, oh my gosh. So if you can preempt that, that can be very helpful. Next, we're going to talk about, you know, patient education advice. So important. I've just kind of mentioned we need to have patient education and, you know, we really want to provide information about their condition, right? So when we talk about their condition, a lot of times if we rule out big, bad, scary stuff, just giving them good information on, hey, this is what we think we got going on, kind of non-specific low back pain or acute back strain, kind of talk about things and just provide them general understanding. And the goal, and we're giving advice, is to increase patient understanding and address their concerns and expectations. Once again, I think that's really the root of this whole like document, is giving people like the understanding and kind of meeting where they're at to like help them address their concerns, right? Because that's the biggest thing. And they come to physicians or whatnot and they say like they're trusting in them to be like, hey, like, what's going on? Like, how can I, you know, what's going on? Am I hurt? Like, am I bad? And so kind of given the advice that, hey, let's meet them where they're at, address their concerns. You know, are they concerned that there's something structurally going on? You can kind of reassure them. Are there concerns that, you know, they're going to be like this forever or they've ruined their back? And we can alleviate those concerns by talking with them. On top of that, we also talk about, you know, discuss the risks, benefits, and costs of medications and treatments, and then overall make a shared decision about care. And I think shared decision is very important, understanding, hey, like, some people are just in so much agony that they're willing to try things. And you can say, hey, like, and the data is not necessarily there for these things, whatnot, you know, we can make the shared decision. If someone says like, hey, I'm down to try that. Maybe they've got some, they call them leg symptoms, or that's like ridiculous symptoms with like, you know, numbness, tingling going on legs. And then maybe they really want to try something for that, whether that's a different type of medication or modality or whatnot, but just really involving them and letting them feel like they're having autonomy, and you should be listening to the patient and kind of working with them and not necessarily telling them what's going on. But it is our job to counsel them about, you know, evidence-informed care, and meaning like, hey, like, you know, what are the evidence-based principles that we go on? But they can also make decisions on their own, and you can kind of help be there and support them. I'm not saying if you do anything you don't want to do as a physician, but understanding that, hey, like working together with the patient is really important. So kind of talked about patient education, and then going into encouragement, you know, self-management and physical activity. This is the biggest thing, man. If I had like one big take home from acute low back pain, is that we need to keep these people active. You know, we need to encourage the patient to stay active and continue to or return to their normal activities or work as soon as possible, right? So we want to get them back. And then we also discuss self-management strategies, develop a plan together to maximize function and limit their impact on their daily life, and then address individual needs and preferences. That kind of, I sound like a broken record, and this document does, but that's really true. We should be addressing individual needs and preferences. And when we're talking about physical activity, I think the biggest thing is just having them be active, right? I think this is also a whole nother like course and lecture and all these things about like treatments for low back pains and like what the lay public says. You know, if you Google best exercises for back pain, you're gonna get these very specific things, and maybe these three exercises or this or that or this stretch or that, and everyone will say it's this method and that, and like the data continues to show that like one method doesn't seem to be better than anything else. And so really just being active seems to be like the best thing. And if for someone, like once again, meeting them where they're at, their needs and preferences, if someone's like, hey, I like, you know, I like doing cardiovascular training or something like that. Like I, you know, I can walk on the treadmill, that feels good. I like that. And you say like, no, you should be really like be doing lots of lunging or like weightlifting. They're like, well, I never did that to start, so why would I start now? And do I think they should be getting there? That's a whole other discussion. Yes, everyone should be lifting and running. That's like or cardio and strength. That's the what we should be doing. But that's neither here nor there. But we have to think about meaning where they're at. And so just kind of helping them stay motivated to like be active. If you're active, that's good. And we want to get you back to the things you're doing earlier. So early return activity, earlier return to work, if possible, all those things. And the goal is to develop a plan together to maximize function, right? And minimize the impact on daily life. Those are the big reasons we're looking at there. And then when we're talking about physical or psychological interventions, we should be offering patients physical or psychological interventions based on the assessment findings. And, you know, maybe understanding that, hey, we might need therapy if we have identified a lots of barriers to recover. This is a little more nebulous of a, you know, recommendation in terms of it's, you can't just like, if someone has acute back pain, you can't necessarily just get them into therapy and be like, oh yeah, they'll be able to like work on CBT or working on managing chronic pain. Or, I mean, it's like, that doesn't necessarily apply, and they might be better by the time they get the referral in. So this is more of a, the way I read this, consideration for if someone's having a really big, you know, exacerbation or things aren't working or not going the way you go, like just thinking about early and often, like, hey, could there be a more, you know, psychosocial component into this that may benefit from other expertise? And so that one's a little tricky, but understand, hey, like we're offering our interventions based on what we see, right? If we see no red flags and things look good, we can get them to self-care or physical therapy or whatnot and kind of go from there. And they do mention also pain medications, and overall they say, yep, not a great idea, which I think we all know, you know, we should be judicious in our use. And one thing I really like, they say the goal of pain medication is to enable physical activity, right? Not eliminate pain. So enable physical activity. And for me, that's like the biggest thing is you're not going to be pain-free, right? If your pain's awful, it's not going to go from awful to nothing. You know, we're going to slowly, stepwise get down there, hopefully return you back to the baseline, but understand that, hey, the goal is to help you be more functional so you can do physical activity, because that's the big thing is being physically active. That's the long-term goal. And if we are starting medication, we want to start with clear stopping goals, meaning, hey, this is a short-term deal. We're going to do this for a little bit. They say overall the evidence for anticonvulsants, benzodiazepines, antidepressants are not there. That being said, obviously we're making a shared decision. If someone's like, I need to try something, it's reasonable. That's overall, that's general evidence, right? So evidence-informed care is that, hey, this is what the evidence is, and evidence-based practicing doesn't seem like it works on the population, but obviously everyone's different. And so understanding risk benefits, but on the overall, the general doesn't seem like a good idea. And on top of that, opioids are considered like only in select patients with the shortest duration possible. And that kind of seems pretty much like a no-brainer now. Like we are not prescribing opioids unless we need to, and it's for a very short duration, which I think everyone's pretty much on board for. And one thing we're going to talk about here is also, you know, renewal, you know, reviewing and referral, meaning, hey, we need to continually reassess the patient. This is not something we should just like, okay, see you later, we're good. Especially if we have worsening symptoms or persistent symptoms or like new neurologic signs or stuff going on, we should have repeated early assessments. And then also if they're not responding well, we need to determine, are there any barriers to improvement or barriers to care? Like, oh yeah, I was supposed to go to physical therapy, but can't get there because I have no way of getting there. Well, that's good to know. We should also look at, you know, if we can get a multidisciplinary team on board, meaning that's maybe whether that's just primary care and physical therapy, or maybe we need to get pain management after a while. And then overall, we're trying to limiting surgical and interventional referrals for unless it's severe or progressive pain. Like let's say we're having progressive, things are getting worse, they're having worse neurologic deficits. That's kind of the general idea for when we'd be doing that. And overall here, I just want to include as well, looking at a timeline. And so this timeline here, it's kind of a big chart, kind of upside down pyramid. What they're saying is essentially in these first 2 weeks up here, you know, we're doing the initial management and assessment. And then in between weeks 2 and 6, we're kind of doing review, meaning, hey, if you've had someone and you saw them initially and like, you're just like, man, they're really sensitive, or that's a lot of pain, maybe bringing them back earlier for an evaluation might be better to get them another touch point to see how they're doing for reassurance. Lots of different reasons, but that might be something to consider. Or if someone's like, man, this is like doing great, you know, I think you'll be fine. And then you don't necessarily have to have them come back. That's the big thing. You know, this is ideal here, but your review in progress, right? Like if they're doing great, like I would say your time's important, just as important as my time. So like if you know, it's a lot of your time to come here. So if you're doing great and you have no pain and you're back, or you're like almost fully back, like you don't have to come back and see me. But one thing to note as well, they kind of give this like 6 to 12 week time frame here. This is like our referral, right? So what I do want to have takeaway is, you know, if you have the severe back strain, you see someone with back strain and they come back and it's just this non-specific back pain, there's no red flags, but like they're still really like having troubles after 6 or 12 weeks, and I don't want you to say like, well, like it'll get better. Like it very well could, like the data would indicate like most likely it still probably would, but usually it's about within that 6 to 12 week time frame. Like if we're not getting better by like 6 to 12, like I'm probably considering, do we need to think about a referral for pain management, for some sort of other additional imaging, maybe to get an MRI? Like that's where we start considering those things. But overall, just give you an idea, and also give your patients a time frame saying, hey, like we gotta give this like 6 to maybe 12 weeks. I would say like 6 is kind of like my repeat. Like, you know, I've mentioned previously that physical therapy takes a long time, and I don't necessarily expect to see big changes in like chronic issues like tendinopathies or patellofemoral pain syndrome in 6 weeks necessarily. But like the data seems to show that for acute low back pain, like 6 weeks is a general like good time where like we should be able to see improvements. And if we're not, then we need to kind of consider like, what's the next step? Do we need to get imaging? Do we need to do a referral? Once again, that's kind of the general ballpark we're looking at. So 6 to 12 weeks though, but once again, patient expectation. And it stinks though, right? You're telling them like, hey, this stinks, like 6 to 12 weeks, and this is where you work together, right? Because it is miserable. If you've ever had back pain, it can be awful. It's debilitating. Patients, you've seen that before. And so just something to consider that, hey, like this is the general time frame, but overall the big takeaway from this is that we should be ruling out big, bad, scary, understanding the psychosocial aspects that may be going on that may be challenging your road to recovery. And then once we identify that, we say, hey, there's no big, bad, scary stuff, no red flags, like get them to early movement. That's the biggest thing, and whatever movement they enjoy. So there's no specific protocol or therapy. If you want to give them a handout, or they believe like this worked well for the last time, or they want to do this, like that's fine. Like whatever they want to do and they can tolerate, that's the biggest thing, is just finding an entry point for them, something they can do, and then just slowly building up from there. That's the biggest thing. And then giving them that time frame of about 6 to 12 weeks. If they're not better in 6 to 12 weeks, then consider referral or imaging or something like that. But overall, that's the big thing. We're really there to kind of reassure patients that, hey, like when you have this low back pain, 6 to 12 weeks, that's the time I give it. I really, you know, I'm there to encourage and help. And if we need to, we can add on adjunct medications if possible, because it's, once again, it's not fun when you have this. And I understand how miserable some patients can be, but you know, being judicious with that, but also understanding that there's a person that you're talking to and there's another person and they're hurting. And if we can help them in some way, shape or form that's safe, then, you know, there's lots of ways to do that. But overall, I hope you found this was helpful and hope you feel a little more confident on diagnosing and treating kind of this non-specific low back pain and these acute variety. But I hope you found this helpful. And that's also the end of this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it. If you found this helpful, send this to someone. You're someone with low back pain or who just strained their back, send it to them. You know, maybe it'd be bad news and they're like, oh shoot, I'm just going to like be in pain for 6 weeks. But hopefully it's just encouraging that like the vast majority of back pain gets better. People are resilient. Their bodies are adaptive and strong and they can recover this. But thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. Now get off your phone, get outside and have a good day, and we'll see you next time. Disclaimer. This podcast is for entertainment, education, and informational purposes only. The topics discussed should not solely be used to diagnose, treat, or prevent any condition. The information presented here was created with an evidence-based approach, but please keep in mind that science is always changing, and at the time of listening to this, there may be some new data that makes this information incomplete or inaccurate. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or qualified healthcare provider for questions regarding any medical condition.